SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Conference USA Underdog Podcast. Joe Londrigan and Eric Henry with you once again. Excited to talk some more college football, as we always do. Before we jump in, I will say this at the end of the show also, but it's a weird time in America, right? So just hope everyone is staying safe, staying healthy, and, you know, really hope that you're doing everything you can to live your best life mentally and physically. And if you ever need anybody to talk to, feel free to reach out to either one of us on Twitter, and we'll certainly do our best. But with that, we'll jump into the football talk, what everybody probably came here for. Today, we are talking Southern Miss Golden Eagles football with Mr. Patrick McGee. He covers that program for the Sun Herald down in beautiful Ocean Springs, Mississippi. You can also follow his high school coverage at Coast Coverage on Twitter. But Patrick, can't thank you enough for your time, man. I'm excited to jump into what's going on with Jay Hobson's team.
Yeah, it's been so long since I really saw Southern Miss practice or lineup for a game. I mean, their bowl game was really late back on January 4th, but here we are 6 months later. Southern Miss didn't have a spring. But, you know, it's a team that's going to look fairly similar to the one from year before, from 2019. You lost the Quez Watkins, who was taken in the draft by the Philadelphia Eagles. That's a big piece of your offense there, receiver. But most of the main pieces are still in place there on offense, aside from maybe Drake Dorbeck at left tackle, who graduated. He signed a free agent deal with the NFL. But Jack Abraham is your quarterback. You've got to change the offensive coordinator. You got Buster Faulkner. He's moved on to Georgia as a member of the staff there. But and you've got a new offensive coordinator that's moved over from Louisiana Lafayette. Louisiana Monroe, and he's going to bring in a look at, you know, wants to run the ball a little bit more. But Matt Kubik is a guy that had a fair amount of success with Louisiana Monroe. So really the goal for Southern Miss going into this season is just really dramatically improving on the ground. They've shown they can throw the ball, but really not having much of a rushing attack. That's put a lot of pressure on Jack Abraham to produce and has led to some interceptions and some really kind of inconsistent play. But everybody knows Southern Miss generally is going to play defense. So really kind of going in, that's the challenge. You got a new offensive coordinator, but you didn't really have a spring at all to really have him implement his new program. So that'll be the challenge going into the fall.
You mentioned Quez Watkins, and continually over the last couple of years, Eric and I have just been continually amazed by what he was able to do at the college level. What are your kind of thoughts on what he can accomplish at the pro level as he moves on to the NFL?
He's going to have to maybe get a little bit stronger. I mean, he's a decent sized guy, you know, 6'1", 195 pounds, 200 pounds, but they'll probably ask him to add some strength. But speed wise, I mean, he'll immediately be one of the faster guys on the Eagles. He ran one of the better 40s there at the NFL Combine. Great hand, really can kind of go up and get it, but he'll be working against much bigger defensive backs in the NFL. I think Quez Watkins will actually have a chance to pitch in a little bit early. It may be a little bit of a challenge for all rookies to get on the field early this season, considering the challenges that have been, no really off-season program. So he's going to have a lot of work to do. But Quez Watkins in the NFL, I think he's got a chance to hang around for a while and play a good bit.
Good to know. And you mentioned Jack Abraham coming back. I think for me personally, when I watch him play, one of the biggest issues for him and for the Southern Miss offense in general has been consistency. Either they look like they can compete with anybody in college football, or they look, you know, like significantly not that. So what are your kind of perceptions of what this offense is going to be like heading into 2020?
Yeah, like I said, Matt Kubik is a new offensive coordinator. And at Louisiana Monroe, he ran a system that had a quarterback that could really kind of take off and run with it. A better athlete. And Abraham's not a terrible athlete, but he's not a runner. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if there's a Tate Watley. He'll be entering his junior year this season. Excuse me. I guess he's a redshirt sophomore because he had a chance to sit out the majority last season now, but he's a better athlete. Maybe they'll mix him in a little bit. They did a little bit of that late in the 2018 season. For Abraham to succeed though, I mean, he's just got to get consistent protection up front, and that comes down to being able to run the ball better. Southern Miss has been, it's been painful to watch at times. the way they've tried to run the ball. And I don't have a great answer on why they've struggled. The offensive line has got adequate personnel. I think the scheme just hasn't worked well, and the running back position has been fairly mediocre. But I think they've recruited well there in the offseason. They brought in, they're bringing in a JUCO running back out at Ragsdale out of Hines Community College outside of Jackson. And he's a guy that had a late offer from Tennessee. He was pretty well regarded. So maybe they bring him in and some of the younger guys move up. If they can run the ball better, that can make all the difference in the world for Southern Miss, because that takes all the pressure off of Abraham to where it's all on his shoulders. And I think that's been the problem, especially late in season, that he's just a little bit banged up and everything's been put on him to win football games. So they're hoping that's not the case this season.
You mentioned some of these younger guys coming in who are going to have to make a significant impact right off the bat. Who are some of those names that people who aren't, you know, as embedded in Southern Miss football as you should know before they start really paying attention to this team this season?
Well, I don't think really in terms of, like, now I mentioned Ragsdale, the running back out of JUCO. He's got a chance to play right away. But in terms of, like, first-year guys coming in and playing, I don't think we'll see that much this year. Just simply because it's a deal to where they have so much returning experience and really some experienced backups coming back. And usually, that'll indicate a good football team. Chris Scruggs, who basically was a redshirt last year, a receiver, I think he's somebody that could maybe help fill some of the receptions that Quez Watkins leaves behind. I think he can kind of fill in a little bit there. He's a little bit bigger receiver, a little taller. I think on the outside, he'll probably have the ball thrown his way some. You have Tim Jones on the inside and Jalen Adams, who was one of the better return men slash receivers in the nation a year ago. He's back at receiver. So there are some, you know, weapons there on offense, but in terms of first year guys, I think there's just a lot to be determined in the secondary. You'll see some first guys step up there, but really it's hard to say who it will be at positions like corner, because they've just got so much really to work on going into the fall.
Certainly makes sense. Based on what Coach Hobson's been able to accomplish the last couple of years, a few sort of mediocre seasons, a few years where they were just on the cusp of breaking into the conference championship game and just fell a little bit short. What's kind of the feeling from fans that you've noticed regarding Hobson, his body of work, and his, you know, potential future of holding down his position as head coach of Southern Miss football?
Yeah, I mean, I think people are a little bit restless. You haven't heard many people really bash Hobson in this calendar year, but I think people have been distracted with a long list of things. There's greater concerns right now than college football, so I think it's kind of quieted down in that regard. But the end of last year in the bowl game where they lost to Tulane, gave up an early lead, kind of fell apart. The team really played poorly down the stretch. I think it was three straight losses to finish out the season whenever they were, you know, looking pretty good at 7-2. It's not a good situation right now. You feel like momentum has stalled somewhat. I mean, that can easily change in a hurry where they kind of get out and get rolling this year and against South Alabama and play well early in the season. Right now I think people are a little bit antsy. I'm not going to say Hobson's on the hot seat, but I think we're kind of trending in that direction just because the team hasn't really met the bar of success that people expect out of Southern Miss football around the program. So I think the focus kind of goes up this year in that they want to see Hobson deliver and at the very least get in that conference title game. They certainly have the pieces in place, the experience. But this is a year to where Hobson really has to step up and really get this team at least to maybe that 8-9 win mark.
Yeah, you mentioned that obviously people have had bigger priorities than football in this first half of 2020. Based on your kind of observations of what's going on with the players, with the coaching staff, with the athletic department in general, what's sort of the vibe at Southern Miss right now with just everything happening in the world?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I know y'all had me on here to talk football in Southern Miss, but I've been covering, as soon as I'm done with the interview here, I'm covering a governor's press conference. I don't have a great feel for the vibe. I think everything's just been kind of a standstill. I think everybody's just kind of waiting to see how things play out. Players have reported to campus here the first week of June and in Hattiesburg, and they're scanning players to make sure nobody's dealing with the coronavirus and And so far, last I checked, they had no positive tests or anything like that, but they weren't testing every player that comes in. They were just monitoring players who've shown symptoms. So it's at Southern Miss right now, I think it's the same as it is anywhere else right now. They just, when can they line up and what's it going to look like whenever they get into the stadium and open on September 5th against South Alabama, if they can, in fact can do that. So I think there's just everything's kind of at a standstill as far as Southern Miss goes and everywhere else.
One last question here before I turn it over to Mr. Eric Henry. Obviously, one of the things that I've been impressed with Coach Hobson just in general has been his recruiting. Who's a player in this signing class that you think is going to be able to make a good impact, maybe not immediately, but down the line for Southern Miss?
That's a good question. I mean, I mentioned Ragsdale earlier. Mm-hmm. When you asked a similar question, he's an impact guy, I would think, right away in terms of, immediate success. In terms, I would think he's probably one of their top two running backs. Frank Gore Jr. has been a popular name to talk about among Southern Miss fans. He's, obviously Frank Gore's son and was committed to FAU at one point. How quickly he can get out of the field remains to be seen. You go down the list, and to me there wasn't a lot of impact guys right away, but I think to where you may see the most impact is at receiver, where you have a Jason Brownlee out of East Mississippi. He's pretty well regarded, and they needed some depth there on the outside in addition to Chris Scruggs, who didn't get a whole lot of playing time a year ago. It's really, replacing Quez Watkins is going to be really tough. And one thing, if you go back and look at the list of recruits that Southern Miss signed this year, I mean, it's heavy, heavy, heavy on junior colleges. So if those guys can't get in and play immediately, they signed the wrong guy. So in terms of like long-term projection, heck, I don't know. I guess Frank Gore Jr., maybe he's a big star. But right now, they really tried to make this class all about the JUCO and trying to get a quick fix, because they know this is a team that can have a chance to play for a conference championship. And Hobson knows patience is wearing thin a little bit.
So, Patrick, I want to jump in here and come back to the quarterback, Jack Abraham, for a second. One of the things that's noticeable to me is that he's, through no fault of his own, he's going to be playing for his third offensive coordinator, is going from Shannon Dawson, Buster Faulkner, and now Matt Kubik. So kind of a two-part question there. One of the differences that was noticeable, at least to me, going from Dawson to Faulkner, was it seemed that under Buster Faulkner, they tend to push the ball downfield a little bit more. Just wondering if that is something that you anticipate. And obviously, without a spring, you didn't have a chance to see any practices or anything like that. But if that's something that you anticipate to continue, and just overall, a quarterback playing with three offensive coordinators, that's never easy.
Yeah, that's you feel bad for Jack, because, I mean, he's had three different offensive coordinators at Southern Miss. He had one at JUCO, and he had a different one at Louisiana Tech. So he's had like six offensive coordinators in 6 years, if you go back to his senior of high school. So that's a little bit unique. He's got a larger collection of offensive coordinators have than most. But yeah, I mean, that's not easy. It's set up to kind of, you feel like Jack's kind of been at a standstill to a degree since he got to Southern Miss. Last year, you really saw some flashes of brilliance. If you go back and watch the Troy game where he and that receiving corps just lit him up, and then you'll kind of turn around against Louisiana Tech and have a letdown where you have a good half and then a bad half. And it comes down to, it's not so much on Jack and his development, it's just the overall development of the offense. So I think Jack's really kind of hung in there and done a pretty good job and tried to learn from coordinator to coordinator, but really the rest of the offense hasn't been able to keep up as well as they should, from whether it's the offensive line or just the running backs trying to understand what's expected of them and where they're going to fit in the offense. So I think that's just that. The problem has been the uncertainty for the personnel across the board, is that they're not quite sure where they fit in from year to year over the last three seasons. So it's developing an identity and trying to build up that rushing attack. And that just hasn't been able to happen the last 2 years.
We've talked a lot about Quez Watkins, but obviously with his departure, someone's got to step up into the role as filling the number one receiver role as well as the number two. Talk a little about Tim Jones and Jalen Adams. You mentioned that Troy game, and I remember that Jalen Adams, I believe he had 11 catches for 180 yards that day. Just talk about those two guys and how they'll be able to step up and fill the absence of Quez Watkins.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tim Jones is an NFL receiver. He's from Biloxi, so he's a kid I've watched ever since the freshman in high school, and it was obvious that he was just heads and shoulders above everybody else, and he had pretty good recruiting interest out of high school, but ended up at Southern Miss. He's a guy that works out of the slot, but he can really work all the field. It wouldn't surprise me if they moved him around a little bit this year. And that Jalen Adams, he's that return guy slash, to me, he's more of a slot, but he's worked outside just because Jones has been so effective there. But Adams is a guy, as long as he's healthy, he was banged up in last year and they kind of missed him out there. Jalen Adams and Tim Jones are probably one of the, two of the best, six or seven receivers in the league. So Southern Miss isn't hurting at receiver. It's just really finding that one go-to guy on the outside. And it's probably going to have to be a first-year guy like a Brownlee or a Scruggs.
We talked about Drake Dorbeck getting the majority of the public of the pub, but an offensive line, obviously rightfully so, and now he's continuing with an NFL career. Want to talk about a guy who's been a 3-year starter entering his fourth year here, maybe gone a little bit under the radar, and Arvin Fletcher. Just talk about his presence, being essentially a starter from day one.
Yeah, and he's a guy that can basically play every position on the line, and I think there's a decent chance he may be the starting left tackle replacing Dorbeck there on the outside. Fletcher was, kind of overlooked coming out of high school, but as soon as he got to Southern Miss, it was pretty obvious he was going to be an impact guy. But he's, he's played mostly on the inside at, at guard, but he's perfectly capable of playing outside. I think he's more natural to guard, but I think they need a steady hand there at left tackle, and Fletcher may end up being their best guy there. So Fletcher is absolutely, he's been probably the most consistent offensive lineman they've had the last few years, but that's been a unit that's been kind of maligned where they haven't been able to create much space in the ground game. But Fletcher is probably their best rush blocker. So Fletcher is a good player, and I think he also has a chance to play in the NFL as probably a right guard.
We've talked a lot about the offense, but we want to go to the defensive side of football for a second here. And just, you mentioned that Southern Miss, they're going to play defense well. They've got two guys in particular who I think are really solid players, one being Kyle Hemby, and the other one being Jacquez Turner. But just outside of those guys, could you talk about those two guys for a second? And then maybe outside of those two guys, who else we should be looking for on the defensive side of the football?
Yeah, Jacquez is another guy I've seen since high school days. He's a defensive end. He's a little, not the tallest, he's 6'1", but he's a big, strong guy, really, really good athlete, has long arms, is able to get in the backfield. Last year was a little underwhelming. He really had a big sophomore year. But it's one of those things to where he's going to have to step it up and really kind of have a big season to improve his stock when it comes to NFL this year. Jacquez is one of the better defensive linemen in the league, and he just didn't always show it last season. And Hemby is another guy that took a slight step back last season after having a really nice sophomore year after transferring after 1 year at JUCO. He's kind of a ball hawker, really is able to kind of chase down stuff in the open field and pick off some interceptions. Swayze Bozeman, he's going to have to be big at linebacker because Rakeem Booth is a little bit of a question mark. He had surgery towards the end of his junior season, and he's really been the centerpiece of that defense for a while now. So they need Bozeman to step up and have a big season because right now it's unsure if Booth is going to be ready to go. I'm sure everybody's hoping that he's kind of taking all the steps in rehab now to be ready for the upcoming season because he's really been a key part of that defense for the last 3 years. So Rakeem Booth and his status is really one thing that people are going to be watching closely going in, but it may fall to a Swayze Bozeman, who I thought had a really productive junior season out of junior college.
And final question here for you before I pass it back to Joe. This part, we'd like to go inside the press box a little bit. Two-part question here for you. One, what's your favorite CUSA city that you visited outside of Hattiesburg? And the second part of that question, what's the best press box meal that you've had that comes to mind?
Oof. I got to think over that one for a second. I like going to Huntington. It was kind of a unique trip, a little bit different than the other ones. You're kind of going up into Appalachia, you don't really get that experience elsewhere. So Huntington, in terms of its uniqueness, I think that's a neat place. I've had a good time in Houston. Obviously, that's a good place to get something to eat. And I'm still really sad that New Orleans Tulane is no longer in Conference USA. That was always a great stop, El Paso. But the best meal, I could go old school. Whenever Memphis was in Conference USA, they had that Rendezvous barbecue up in the press box, and that was good stuff. Everywhere is pretty standard right now in terms of food in the press box. So everybody's kind of scaled back. So I'm going to give everybody F's in that regard.
No, I'll definitely agree with you there. I know at FIU the first year, there things were a little more catered towards the South Florida culture. And now we're, you know, kind of scaled back the pizza and fries, which, hey, it's a free meal. I'm not complaining on that end. And obviously with you being CUSA West, you've got most of those stops. One, a stadium that I will swear by, and it's probably a city as a whole, is Charlotte. Charlotte kind of surprised me is how scenic that campus was, and especially Jerry Richardson Stadium. Just kind of, it's a kind of like a high school stadium in the feel, you know, really unique and intimate. So that one's always a pretty good stop there.
Yeah, I like Bowling Green. It's a neat little town, and their campus is very pretty up at Western Kentucky. I thought they were kind of maybe unique in that it was a pretty, you know, it's a sizable town, but it's a college town. They've got a good vibe there on campus.
Gotta love Bowling Green as a Western Kentucky fan and a Kentucky person myself. So I'm sure they appreciate the kind words about the town. We'll take that into account next time you come around. But Patrick, once again, can't thank you enough for your time, man. And for those listening, if you want to go check out his Southern Miss coverage, highly encourage you to do that. He is on Twitter at Patrick_McGee, M-A-G-E-E. And you can find his coverage at sunherald.com. Pat, can't thank you enough once again, man, and have a great rest of your day.
All right. Thanks, guys. Stay safe.
All right. Once again, thank you to Patrick McGee of the Sun Herald for coming on and talking to us. Highly encourage you to check out his Southern Miss coverage. And once again, his Twitter was at Patrick_McGee, M-A-G-E-E. So after all that talk about Southern Miss, do you want to jump into some notes from around the conference that I'm sure the majority of our audience would be interested in? First off, UTEP trying to figure out their quarterback situation for next season, and Bowling Green State baseball's loss looks to be the Miners' gain. It was a 3-star recruit in high school, ran a lot of the spread option, but Miner fans are going to get to know the name Mike Malowitz. Sounds like he is going to try out for both quarterback and slot receiver, at least according to the good folks over at the Hustle Belt. Yeah, it seems like basically they're trying to fill in that hole that that Kyle Loxley left as he tries to make the NFL happen. But yeah, Eric, for me, this is it's a good story. Obviously, the COVID situation has dramatically affected college athletics opportunities for a lot of athletes, both in football and outside, obviously. So, good on UTEP for giving this kid another shot at achieving his athletics dreams. And two, I haven't watched a ton of film on it, other than obviously this kid has a lot of athletic ability. You have to in order to run kind of the spread option and be a 2-sport athlete. But what do you kind of know about Mike Malowitz and the dimension that he could potentially add to the Miners offense?
Yeah, first things first, Joe, is like you said, just an awesome story that the kid gets a chance to continue his college education. I believe Bowling Green did say that they'd offer some of the scholarships. For those of you, Joe, you know this being familiar with college baseball, for the audience who may not be familiar, not the entire college baseball team is on scholarship. A lot of those guys are on partials or paying a portion of their way, but I believe that his scholarship would have been offered anyhow. But just for a chance for him to go and continue his dream playing college athletics is really cool. But in terms of him on the football field, yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, he's someone who is kind of that would have been coming out as a 3-star, like a dual threat type quarterback. So it's not really sure how he's going to play into the offense. The big takeaway that I get from that is Dana Dimel is just like, hey, I welcome competition any and everywhere as we're trying to get this thing rebuilt and you know, get this program in the right direction. But the second thing is, and it's a 2-part thing, I'm going to bounce this off of you, Joe. That'd be a hell of an indictment on, you know, the players they have there currently, one being Gavin Hardison, the other being TJ Goodwin. If, you know, Mike Malowitz comes in there and wins the job, that's the first thing. But the second thing is that UTEP really has to develop an identity. For the past 2 years, we've talked about it, whether it's been Kyle Loxley rotating in and out, And it's always been Loxley as the dual threat. And then either last year, Ryan Metz, and now kind of Gavin Hardison as kind of that classic drop back passer. So I really think that offense needs to develop an identity and say, hey, if we're not going to play two different quarterbacks who do two different things, and we're just going to try to start one and go the entire way, they've got to figure out what they're going to do as far as being, you know, that that maybe traditional passing attack, or if they're going to try to use someone like Kyle Loxley, who's a dual threat, who kind of fits more in the scheme of Mallowitz.
Based on like how UTEP's offense performed last year, like, do you think that this is going to be a noticeable performance, or are the other pieces within this offense going to have to significantly chip in regardless of who they get at quarterback? What do you think?
No, most definitely. I mean, one of the things that had given me at least a little bit of optimism as far as UTEP last year was, we all know they had the running back Trayvon Hughes, who graduated, but they also had Quadrez Wadley, who probably would have been the starter. Trayvon Hughes would have been the change of pace back. However, Quadrez Wadley, I believe, tore his ACL around this time last year, so he missed all of last season. Getting him back and then getting the three-star recruit, I believe he's a native of El Paso, Deion Hankins, having him in tow as the running back position as well. So that'll help. But the major thing, Joe, is just the receiver position. You know, I know they've got Justin Garrett. I believe Walter Dawn Jr., if my memory serves me correct, was their leading receiver last year, and he transferred out. He entered the transfer portal. I'll go back and check my notes to make sure I got the right name there. So it's really going to take a group effort as far as, you know, kind of supporting the quarterback position. One of the things I did, Joe, you know, since I've had plenty of time during the downtime with, you know, kind of COVID-19 and everything being, you know, shut down, is I just went back and tried to watch a football game from each CUSA team. Mm-hmm. And I did say Walter Dunn, but I think Trishon Wolf was the guy I was referring to who transferred out, the receiver. But when I had a chance to watch UTEP last year, Joe, you and I on this podcast, you know, we kind of talked about Kyle Loxley's inconsistencies, but when you look at them and you actually watch a game, it's not all him, you know. And you can say the same thing about any quarterback, right? You know, they get too much blame when they lose and too much credit when you win. But it definitely isn't just a quarterback situation down there in El Paso.
Definitely not. And you mentioned the receiver situation. The possibility for Mallowitz to play receiver is absolutely still there. So we'll see how that shakes out. But it could be the start of something for Dana Dimmel's Miners as they approach the 2020 season. And speaking of Dana Dimmel, that's a good transition into what we wanted to talk about next. Athlon Sports released their list of the top coaches in CUSA heading into 2020. And unfortunately for Coach Dimmel, he is at the bottom at number 14. Just running through the order real quick, you have UTEP at the bottom with Dimmel at number 13, UTSA and Coach Jeff Traylor. Number 12, Ricky Rain at Old Dominion. Number 11, Coach Mike Blumgren at Rice. 10, Coach Jay Hobson, who we just talked to Patrick McGee about at Southern Miss. Number 9, Tyson Helton from Western. 8, Willie Taggart at FAU. 7 is Rich Stockstill from MTSU. 6 is Seth Luttrell. 5 is Will Healy from Charlotte. 4, Doc Holliday. 3, Skip Holtz. 2, our good friend Coach Butch Davis. And number 1, Bill Clark from UAB. A couple initial thoughts from me on this list. A, Helton's way too low, and you can call that bias or whatever, but even with only having one season as a head coach under his belt, I feel like they're really discounting the massive shift in culture that he instituted following the Mike Sanford era and what he's been able to do in such a short time there. There's definitely a few things that I would have skipped, I would have flipped around rather. I appreciate Skip Holtz being so high, and I probably would have had him at number 2. You know, it's tough. I probably would have had. It's tough because I feel like they're basing this on like the program's potential and not necessarily the coach's abilities as a whole. I think like if you just look at like the overall experience and what he's been able to do over the course of his career, I probably would have had him at 1. And then Coach Holtz based on his collective record at Louisiana Tech and taking them to so many consecutive bowl games. And then I would have had Coach Clark in there personally, but that's not really a knock on him. I just think the collective body of work of those other two guys is a little bit more impressive. That's basically kind of my thought. I do think that having the issues with the three Texas schools of UTEP, UTSA, and Rice deserve to be towards the bottom, obviously, and Ricky Rain a little bit unproven. So I think that's kind of fair to put him at the bottom. But what do you think? I feel like basically my main complaint is I feel like they're basing this on the potential of the team and not necessarily the ability of these coaches as a whole.
Well, I completely agree with you as far as Tyson Helton. And here's one of the things that I found curious, right? Because Tyson Helton got the slot at 9, but then you look at 5 and you see Will Healy, and I almost feel like you're talking about two coaches who did virtually the same thing in terms of changing the culture with the program overnight and turning them into a winner. Now, it really plays into your point about, are they taking into account the program potential, right? And I mean, if you ask me personally, yes, anyone who's listened to this podcast knows I'm as big a fan of the Charlotte program as anyone else. And I do think there's a lot of potential starting with, you know, the stadium and the facilities all the way through to the coach and the environment. But I don't know if it's because in the first line of Will Healy's blurb here, it says at age 35. I don't know if they're taking into account that Will Healy's 35 or what. But, I mean, I would think if you're going to, you know, move Will Healy in 1 year in conference over a Seth Littrell, even a Rick Stockstill, or a Willie Taggart, then, you know, you got to give Tyson Helton the same bump. I found the cluster of Taggart 8, Stockstill 7, Seth Littrell 6 kind of interesting. I'm not sure if my memory serves me correct. I believe Coach Littrell was like 3 or 4 last year. So, you know, they're also taking into account the drop-off that North Texas had. I'm a Rick Stockstill guy. I mean, I think at this point, it's easy to rank him 7 because you can say, I mean, well, he's been there now 15 years and you kind of have an idea of what he is. So you don't get the boom or bust idea that you could kind of get with Coach Healy, right? So I think that raises an interesting point as well. And then up at the top, you know, and hold on really quick before I finish that, I feel like you can make the same argument with Doc Holliday that you just said, or I just mentioned with Rick Stockstill. So that's why I found that seating kind of curious. And then, you know, like I said, 1 through 3, Bill Clark, I'm fine with Bill Clark at 1. I get where you're kind of hinting at as far as, listen, no one's going to take anything away from the job that he's done with UAB as far as rebuilding that program from scratch. However, if you look, take into account the whole body of work, you probably are going to go Butch Davis and Skip Holtz above him. And, you know, you could take into account my biases or however you want to you call them as far as having a Coach Davis there. I think with Butch, the main thing is wherever he goes, the talent level increases. And I think people tend to forget. I don't have the number directly off the top of my head. I have it somewhere in my notes. And I'm sure I've written it somewhere in a piece for UDD. But FIU was not a good program in the 13, 14 years. Let's see, this is year 18 for FIU. So in the 14 years prior, FIU had only had 2 winning records, if my memory serves me correct. I believe that a winning percentage is something like under 30%. So the fact that he's taken the program to 3 straight bowl games does, you know, if you want to take into account his tenure in CUSA and his overall tenure as a head coach, you can make the argument for him at 1. But overall, I mean, like I said, I guess the only real major gripe I would have would be Tyson Helton 9. I think he could have gotten a bump higher.
Yeah, all very good points. And like I mentioned, I feel like this is not necessarily taking into account the collective bodies of work of all of these coaches. So you could make the argument that this list probably could have used a little more TLC, but at the same time, completely understand where Athlon Sports is coming from in this with the fact that it's the off season. There's not really any other sports going on. We all need content. It's you know, it is what it is, but certainly an interesting point of discussion for college sports fans as we continue to kill time in quarantine here. Finally, one thing that we wanted to talk about here, Florida signing into law a new bill that basically will give athletes the ability to make money off of their image and likeness in the same vein that all these other states are trying to make happen. But basically, this is going to go into effect a full 18 months earlier than the laws that are currently being passed in California and Colorado. This one would take this one would start on July 1st, 2021. So Florida, I feel like if you can give them credit for one thing, they're definitely usually on the cutting edge of making sure that college athletics are doing the right things in order to A, be as profitable as possible, and B, I feel like they do a decent job of making sure that athletes are in as good a spot as they can be from a welfare perspective, because they know how much revenue for the state sports generates, and they want to make sure that those athletes at both the pro level and college level are happy. So I really have no problem with this, and I feel like it's going to be interesting for Florida to once again be America's petri dish and do a little test of how this is really going to work for all of us.
Well, if it's one thing we're good at down here, it's being America's guinea pig. You know, you can definitely try it out on us down here first, and we will let you know how it goes. You know, not too much to add on to what you just said. I mean, quick thoughts. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. You and I can probably save our elongated thoughts for another podcast, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out the G5 level. I see, you know, I've seen some things about FAU or FIU, how they can capitalize on this. The Governor Ron DeSantis actually came out and said that he would like to see more kids stay in state. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But it's just one of those things that I think on a further podcast we can elongate and go more on that. But, yeah, Florida, we will be your guinea pig, and you can try it out on us first.
Gotta love you, Florida. So once again, thank you all for listening. Once again, can't thank you enough for the continued support of the show, and we're going to continue to do as good a job as we can given the circumstances with everything. And real quick before we wrap up, just wanted to say to everybody out there, hope you are staying safe, staying well. It's a weird time to live in the U.S. and just be a person on earth. So thank you so much once again, and just hope you're happy and living as good a life as you can. Follow us on Twitter at Underdog Dynasty. I'm at @JOEHIO _. Eric is at @EricCHenry _. We'll talk to you very soon. And once again, thank you to Patrick McGee for joining us today. And hopefully we'll have more writers of his incredible caliber on the show very soon. Talk to you soon, everybody. Happy football watching.